So amongst the blessings that Bilam, HaRasha, bestows upon the Jewish people against his will, one of them, which is a very eloquent and favorite statement, is Ki Am Levadad Yishkon Ubagoyim Lo Yischashav, which really means that we left the idol worshippers and all the other immoral countries, and we established on our own a separate unit, a separate nation that was Levada, that is lonely. And if you're following the news in the last couple of days, but it's really the last couple of thousand years, you know how lonely exactly we really are as a nation. But Chazal were worried because over the course of our diaspora, the bitter years of exile and Golus, the Jewish people lived and worked amongst the Goyim. And there was always a possibility of getting too close to the Goyim until we would probably end up marrying them. And that's really what happened in many cases during the course of Jewish history. And the question that Chazal addressed was how to guarantee that there be a separation between the Jew and the non-Jew. So for example, although the Torah only prohibits Yayin Nesach, which is wine that was used for a libation to Avodah Zorah, the Rabbanah went a step further, and they prohibited Stam Yenom, which means any wine that came in contact was manufactured by non-Jews. You can go into a wine store anywhere in the West and see hundreds and hundreds of cases and qualities and categories of wine. And they're all kosher in the sense that there's no non-kosher ingredients, but Chazal prohibited it. And they prohibited Cholav Akum and Gvinas Akum, even Pas Akum. Some of these gzeiros were not accepted by Klal Yisrael. There's a system of checks and balances. It was gzeiros she'efshat tzibur lamud ba. So for example, we'll be mekil on eating what's called Pas Palter, which is professionally baked bread. I mean, there are those who are machmir the whole year round. Most of us are machmir during Aseres Yemei. The rest of the year, we eat Arnold's rye bread, you know, which has an OU on it, which the OU only tells me that there are no non-kosher ingredients inside the bread, but it doesn't really tell me anything about the fact that it was baked by a Jew. It wasn't baked by a Jew. I don't think Artie is Jewish, but in any event, so the answer is that we didn't accept the whole kit and caboodle. But when it comes to bishul akum, the Mishnah says that shloko shel akum, which means vegetables that were cooked by goyim, are prohibited. And that was a gzera that was made because once you start eating the foods that were cooked by the goyim, they'll start cooking for you, they'll start inviting you in, we'll have these massive festival meals together. Now here, I don't think you have this problem, but if you were working for a firm like this in Chutz Laaretz, then from time to time they would have these parties, you know, wine and cheese parties. They have it, especially when they get a new person on board, you know, they'll have a party and there's wine and there's cheese. And Orthodox Jews have a tendency of participating. They don't want to be left out, even though they don't eat the cheese and they don't drink the wine. But nevertheless, the issue is it really within the spirit of Halach, you know, the fifth Shulchan Aruch, to participate in these things and have this kind of kiruv with the goyim? So again, I'm not paskining for you, but you know, you have, everything has to be studied with a certain discretion. You know, use a certain discretion.
So then, in cases, I guess, like here, when we have, you know, all different types of people, so the company tries to make it so everyone can participate. So like,
but how many non-Jews are on staff? You know, a whole bunch. I mean,
currently not too many. But
not too
many.
So like, I wouldn't worry about that. You know, when you're working in a non-Jewish firm and you're like the only Jew around and everyone's kissing and hugging, you know, then I don't know if it's in the spirit of the law. Again, I'm not telling you not to go, but yeah, you know, I get shilas from, but not so much anymore because I'm in Israel, but in the old days I used to get shilas from my students about interviews, you know, job interviews with the yarmulke, without a yarmulke, and all this. And you know, again, there's always that issue because we come in so much in contact in chutzlar, it's close contact with, in the employment world, in the market, you know, with non-Jews. Excuse me. And then it may lead to close relationships. And you could always ask, well, everything could lead to close relationships. So maybe I shouldn't go into a supermarket. You know, I might get friendly with some guy in there. You know, I shouldn't go. Yeah. But Chazal made Gdarim, and we have to observe Vesyagim, you know, the way they created a Siag. And in the case of Bishul Akum, we don't permit eating kosher food that's been cooked by a non-Jew. Now, does that apply if the non-Jew is cooking professionally, commercially? For example, let's say I invite a chef into my house, and obviously I supervise the kashrus, so I invite him into my restaurant or my hospital, or you know, I hire a non-Jewish chef in an old age home. You know, these are all sorts of scenarios which come up very often in Chutz Laretz, and the question arises as to whether or not this would be the kind of cooking that might lead to a close relationship. Is this included technically, according to the law, in halacha that prohibits bishalach? And another issue would be, and this is very relevant today, microwaves. You have things that you pop into a microwave and they get cooked pretty quickly. Now, if it's re-cooking, that's a whole different story. The idea of bishalach was to take something from its state of non-edible into state of edible. If he's just re-cooking it, that's okay. Again, only because we're looking to isolate a kind of bishal chashuv, a certain chashivas to the bishal, which might lead him, the guy, to get so close to the Jew that he starts inviting the Jew in, and so forth and so on. So let's take a look at the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, which you'll see on the third paragraph on your page. And there the Mishnah addresses the question of shlokos. Shlokos are vegetables mivusholim that have been cooked, al yidei goy. And the Gemara says that the reason for this isur is not a kashrus issue, but it's a takonas chachamim. And the reason for it, according to Rashi in the Mishnah there in Avodah Zarah, is kedei limnoa kirva ben Yehudim leben goyim, to create these barriers, these social separations between Jews and non-Jews, to avoid intermarriage. That's Mishum Chitun. And the Rambam says it explicitly, and he dedicates a very big chunk of the 17th Perek of Machalos Asuras to this issue of Bishalak. The problem is that Rashi, not in the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, but in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, contradicts himself, and he says that the fear is, if we start eating from the cooked foods of the Goyim, eventually they're going to invite us in, and they're going to feed us even non-kosher food. It's very hard to supervise the non-Jew when he's actually cooking on our behalf and inviting on our behalf. And even though this seems to be Adas Yochid, and even Rashi himself doesn't clearly follow consistently with this, but the Or Zeruah, one of the great Chachmei Ashkenaz, embraces the sheet of Rashi that Bishal Akam is a kashrus issue. The Hagos Hashri says that if the foodstuff is already cooked, Macholim Mivusholim, this is three lines below, above the bottom of your page, you have that inside, he says, if lo hishtanu mimar isam hativi nitan lahakir bekalus bein machal amachal, ein chasha shem yova yehudi lechol macholos asuros. He says that even if you go with the approach of the Arzarua, that Bishal Akum is a subcategory of kashrus, and a real fear of macholos asuros, he says nevertheless, if you have something that hasn't been radically changed by the guy, then we're not afraid. If it's lo hishtanu mimar isa mativi, in other words, let's say you have something that's already cooked. So when you took it from a raw to a cooked state, it changes its whole tzura, its whole mara, its whole color, the way it appears, correct? If you looked at, let's say, a cooked cucumber, you know, it would be obviously different than a raw cucumber, right? But once it's already cooked, and the guy re-cooks it, he says that's not a serious enough, a profound enough change in the object to be considered as if it's real bishul akum. And therefore, it's not prohibited. That's on page 1. And now we want to look on page 2. Is there an extra copy of page 2? I seem to have given out all my copies here.
Here.
Oh, thank you. And now we get on to what classifications of food were included in this takon. Not all foods are included. Number one, something that can be eaten raw and is cooked by a goy. Let's say, for example, coffee or tea. You go on an airplane and you order coffee or tea, correct? So I'm not talking about the tea itself, you know, the bag of tea, which that's an issue. Of course, it was manufactured, it was cooked. But let's say the tea bag is okay. Right? It's not bishul akum. But what about the water? The water was heated up by a non-Jew. So the answer is that water doesn't come under the iser of bishul akum because it's nechal chai, means it can be eaten raw. Mm. Again, we're looking for a profound change in the object. If it could be eaten raw, then it's not bishalakum. Now, some poskim are wondering about shlokos. Most vegetables can be eaten raw. The answer is that shlokos are vegetables that cannot be eaten raw. And if you think of it, there are some vegetables like potatoes or, I don't know, cabbage. I don't know, if you eat it raw, you get a real bellyache. You know, I don't even know if it's edible. I doubt if you'd make a bar priyat dam on it. So in that case, the guy, by cooking it, is really making a profound change because you don't eat raw potatoes. On the other hand, take a carrot. I like raw carrots. You like raw carrots. So the guy cooked the carrots. And now it's cooked carrots. That is not included in the Issur Bishalakum because I could have just as well have eaten the carrot raw.
What about sushi?
What about sushi? So today there are people who eat sushi, but yet there are still many people, I don't know if they're in the silent majority or the silent minority, that will not eat fish unless it's cooked. Meat, it's just that 99% of the population, you wouldn't eat meat unless it was cooked or fried or grilled. But fish already now became an issue. Now, I don't know. You tell me, all fish can become sushi? Like tuna fish, you can eat raw?
Tuna is one of the fish that they put into sushi, but I don't know if they do it.
Because one of the main issues with what's called, in America, it's called OU tuna fish, which is usually, I think, Bumblebee, I'm not sure which companies, is that it might be a bishalakum problem. And that's because the guy not only manufactures the tuna fish, meaning he catches the fish and he skins the fish and he puts it into the can, but he also cooks the fish. And if you wouldn't eat the tuna fish raw, then it's eino nechal chai, it's included in the bishalakum, and the question is, how can the OU give such a hechsher? Maybe the OU is thinking that there's sushi on tuna fish now. I don't know. You'd have to call up Rabbi Gnack or the other heads of the kashrus department and figure out what the heck there is for tuna fish.
I think that red tuna is served
raw.
Raw.
Okay, so I'm just saying that maybe the OU is saying that this kind of tuna fish that you're buying, which is marketed by Bumblebee Tuna Fish, your company, is Nechal Chai. It could be eaten raw. Maybe that's what they're saying. I don't know. To me, it seems like a very narrow, you know, push into the elephant to an eye of a needle, if you know what I mean. Now, if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, he says that not only Nechal Chai is excluded from Bishalakum, but Eino Ole Al Shulchan Malach. And this is a very ambiguous concept. A food which would not be eaten by a king on the king's table, you know, Henry VIII when he made his banquet, that's not included under Bishalakum. Now the truth is, as far as I know, kings will eat anything. I don't know that kings are so such feinschmeckers that there's certain things they wouldn't eat.
Isn't that the very definition of a feinschmecker?
I don't know. The kings, what do kings not eat? I don't know.
Vegetables.
I know they smoke cigars. You know, maybe they don't smoke cigarettes.
They wouldn't eat it, but they wouldn't. The servants wouldn't put it on the table. It's not
right.
Brilliant.
Right. Probably what the Gemara means is, and this is what the Shulchan Aruch is codifying, that it's not chashuv. It wouldn't be included in the banquet. You know, maybe it would be an entree. I don't know. Maybe it would be a dessert. I don't know what the status of entrees and desserts are. But it wouldn't be a main staple as part of the Shulchan Aruch. In fact, you should know historically, although we assume that potatoes are included on the Bishalakum, that wasn't always assumed. The Chayyadim, for example, says that potatoes are not Ola al Shulchan Malachim. That kings don't eat potatoes. Today, you go to the most fancy catering halls and weddings, and they have 50 different ways of preparing potatoes, and you hardly even know it's a cooked potato. But back in the day, according to that Shita, potatoes are not subject to the law of Bishalakum.
I like that.
But the real issue about both sides is going to be things like cornflakes. Like, I don't know how many people here eat Kellogg's cornflakes with a hechsher on it. Yeah, I think it comes from England, if I'm not mistaken. I don't mean England, but I mean say I think the central, whatever you call it, factory for cornflakes is in the United Kingdom. Or whatever it is, it's not relevant to us. You eat Kellogg's cornflakes and a million other cereals, and it's got a hechsher. And yet it is made by goyim, it's prepared by goyim, it's wheat or corn or barley or oats, whatever it is, and it's not edible raw. Or, for example, pretzels. How many people buy pretzels that have an OU on it? Who doesn't buy pretzels? I love pretzels, right? And pretzels should be a bishalakum problem. Is it possible to say that pretzels is not olal shulchan malachim? Because when King Henry VIII is eating, you know, he's eating that drum bone. You know, have you ever been down to Orlando and you're like drooling at the mouth because every other guy on this, you know, in Disneyland is carrying, you know, this 6 foot long, you know, drum bone, you know, turkey drum bone,
it's
and you know,
like, it's past
it. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, shouldn't talk about that, right? Yeah, they used to have seal test ice cream that had an OU on it in Disney World. I don't know if it's still there, but I remember once I took my little kids. We were standing in the hot sun, you know, around this time of the year. It was really hot down in Florida, and we're waiting for this this ride. I still remember my little Hedda. She's already, can I know, her mother of four. She, and we're waiting on this ride of, you know, these little elephants that go round and round like Dumbo elephants, you know. And we're just dying of heat. So I bought seal test ice cream. And I'm telling you, Rabosai, I felt like my body temperature went down like by 20 degrees with every lick, you know. But anyway, there are certain things that are not part of the mainstay of a kingly banquet. And maybe we could come up with a heterim for a lot of things that are kosher but are cooked by goyim and say that they're not part of the basic meal of goyim. Of a king. And therefore, if it's lacking in chashivas, the Ran explains there in Avodah Zorah, Eino lechal, Eino nechshovil macholam chashuvim, it's not a chashivas dika thing, therefore, Ein chashash shevi yovali de kirva, you know, it's not like I owe you one, you know, Mr. John or Paul, because you did me such a great thing that you served, you know, you served these little roasted peanuts or something. That's not, that doesn't have chashivas. All right, let's see if we could fast forward a little bit. Do you see the section that says Bishal Akum Beis Yehuda? All right. Now Tosfos in Avodah Zarah quotes a Ravid. This Ravid is a radical chiddush, and the question is whether we paskin like the Ravid. This could change the whole understanding of Bishal Akum. The Ravid is of the opinion that Bishal Akum only applies if the guy cooks in his house. But if the guy cooks in the Jewish house and you supervise the kashrus, there's no issue of bishul akum. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. Oh, so according to the Ravid, the only time that there's bishul akum is when the guy is cooking in his house, and ultimately this might lead down the line to his inviting you into his house. And therefore, if we would rely on the Ravid, as we'll soon see in the poskim, then all these issues about restaurants and commercialized products that are sold on the market, or for example, as I said, hospitals and old age homes where you could have a chef who's non-Jewish, those problems don't exist according to the Ravid. Because again, it's not the guy who's inviting you into his living room, his kitchen, to serve you.
Is this what is the, this is like a part of modern day kosher in terms of having like a mashgiach there? Like,
well, yes and no.
Bishul Akum?
Right. Well, yes and no. In other words, in befall, meaning hands-on, you're absolutely correct. That is the job of mashgiach to guarantee there's no bishul akum.
So according
conceptually, conceptually, just want to point this out, according to all Rishonim, except for the Arzaruah who adopts that strange Rashi, it is not the job of the mashgiach who's in charge of kashrus to guarantee that there's no bishul akum. Because bishul akum is not a kashrus issue. For example, the question in the poskim is there blia v'kelim in bishul akum? A guy cooked for me in a pot. Do I have to take this pot now and be magil the pot b'hagol b'roschim? So that's a machlokas. If you say it's a kashrus issue, then the blia itself is a blias iser, no less than non-kosher meat. If on the other hand it has nothing to do with kashrus, it's a special isa gavra that you're not allowed to eat it, but it's not unkosher, non-kosher, then l'chor, there's no blia v'kelim in bishul akum. So when you ask me whether the mashgiach has to testify that there's no issue of bishul akum, the answer is yes. L'maisa, practically. Conceptually, I don't know if it's called within the purview of mashgiach kashrus. Now, do we accept the Ravid? Rabbeinu Tam rejects the Ravid. and he says there is no kula in the case of a guy outside his house. Wherever the guy cooks, that's bishalakma. And guess what? You would have enjoyed a kula here in the Shulchan Aruch, passing like the Ravid against Rabbeinu Tam. But nevertheless, I hate to disappoint you, the Shulchan Aruch paskins lechumra, that even if the cooking was done in Beis Yehudi, in the house of a Jew, there is an Iser Bishalakum. The Ramah, though, wants to gain something here, salvage something from this heter, the Ravid, and he says, okay, the guy cooks in your house, Bishalakum, but only if he's a free agent. If, on the other hand, he is compelled to cook, he is being hired, or she is being hired to cook, she's getting a salary, that's called a misharetet. In such a case, we could rely on the rifle. What is the logic of the Ramah? Why does the Ramah think that the fact that this person is being paid as a chef should be a mitigating circumstance? He's not willing to go all the way and accept the Ravid and say that whenever the cooking was done outside the house of the guy, it's mutter. Only if it's a professional chef who's being paid and salaried, then the Ravid is willing to rely on the Ravid. Why?
Well, if you're paying the guy, then there's no
kirva. Correct. What were you going to say, Aaron?
I was going to say,
let me just, because Aaron was really, you know,
if you stop paying him, he'll stop coming. Like, there's no.
That's another point. Yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, it kind of seems like these are two separate mitigating circumstances, and I could hear the argument saying even if he cooked in his own house, but you paid him, if he cooked in a factory, it's like it's a totally different kind of relationship. The shalakum has to do with, don't accept gifts and don't be close and don't whatever. Here, this is business.
I want to tell you this, Jonathan. The reason
it's not personal. That's the answer.
Exactly. But the reason why the Ramah would not go as far as to allow a business relationship, the guy is cooking in his own house, is because of the Arzarua based on Rashi. There's also a dimension here of kashrus issue. So even if we solve the kashrus issue and we move the guy into the Jewish house and now the cooking is supervised, nevertheless, it could be that there's a bishalakum problem. And the Ramah says it all depends on what the guy is selling, if it's a business relationship. The Ramah goes on to say that he thinks that in the case of Misharetes, since she's working in the house of the Jew, we can always assume, listen carefully to Ramah's assumption, that the Jew will in some way participate in the bishal. Now, I know this from my experience because we bring in this Rachel, you know, sometimes to cook for us, like before Pesach, we need massive amounts, you know, to feed all our guests. But my wife is always on top of her, you know, and she's stirring the pot and this and that. But notice that the Ramah says that if the Jew will participate in the talith, in the process of bishul, then it's not bishul akum, meaning bishul akum requires that the guy, according to the Ramah, take the process of bishul from A all the way to Z, you know, for the entire process. So here's my question to you. According to the Ramah, if I turn on the fire and the guy cuts up the vegetables, puts the vegetables in a pot, takes the pot and puts the pot on the fire, would that be bishul akum? No. Because the Jew participated in the bishul by turning on the fire.
Well, if we would the tea that you said earlier, the tea on the airplane, that the stewardess is heating up the hot water. Well, in that case, you could even say, well, look, the hot water is part of a larger process, also involves cooking the tea, and I put the tea bag in the tea. Mm. So it was a joint effort.
No, but the only thing is, let's say something is bishul akum, and now you want to recook it. That doesn't remove the issur bishul akum.
No, it does if I say it was part of that was my whole thing. You know, that was
no, I'm saying
process.
Once the issur is chal, you know, and it's a chepz of bishul akum, you know, maybe you could, I don't know what you could do with it. I don't know if there's any.
Well, no, let's say.
But I'm saying if cooked water would be bishalakum, which it's not, because it's nechal chal. I don't know if adding the tea would change.
You cook the vegetables, but it's like you weren't making cooked vegetables, you were making lasagna. They took the cooked vegetables and
right.
You took the lasagna.
So that would, I don't know of any poskim who will mitigate in that case, because once it's already bishalakum, if the akum took it in a complete bishal, it becomes a foodstuff that's also towards bishalakum. The fact that the Jew decides to add that and mix it to a thing, that's a, But in any event, the Mechaber is not willing to accept this heter of the Jew turning on the fire. Can anybody think why?
Because now they're more involved together.
Well, why would the Mechaber allow the Jew to stir the pot, but not to turn on the fire? Meaning, it's not sufficient that the Jew turns on the fire, and then the guy puts the pot on the fire. You need more than that. You need that the Jew stir the pot, or take the pot off the fire and put it back on before it's cooked. Anybody take a stab at that?
Maybe because when you tell her that it tastes really good, it doesn't. And,
no, why is and turning on the fire? Again, it's very simple. You're looking for too complicated. No. Why is turning on the fire not enough?
You just taste the food.
That's
itself.
Not actually.
Exactly, not actually bishul because there's nothing on the fire. So the mechaber requires that you do something during the process of bishul. For example, hagasah when you stir the pot, or for example, you turn up the flame higher, or you throw something into the flame. You know, a little piece of wood. That's the mechaber.
Lighting the fire is enough for kashrus.
Well, what do you mean by kashrus? The only kashrus issue in lighting a fire is bishul akum. And bishul akum in the case of a Jew who turns on the fire and the guy puts the food on the fire is a machlokas between the machaber and the ramah. That's why Sfaradim have a much more serious problem with regard to bishul akum. Ashkenazim have this ramah to rely on. So like you asked me about the mashgiach. The mashgiach comes in, turns on the flames and goes home. I don't mean that literally because he has to make sure there's no non-kosher ingredients. But as far as bishul akum is concerned, he can take a walk. But according to the mechaber, that's not enough. Because the mechaber needs the mashgiach to run around and participate in the process of bishul subsequent to the placing of the pot by the guy on the fire. And that's very difficult. So I saw that some poskim want to say that even the Sfaradim could be mekil if we add 2 points together. This is what's called in the halachic language in general, methodologically, it's called shnei snifim lekula. Did you ever hear that phrase? You know, you got a little chapir and a chapir. Each one on itself is not enough, but if you add them together, you can be maker. So according to the Mechaber, although we don't possibly like the Raavad, but if you have a woman who's working in a Jewish home, or for that matter, outside of a non-Jewish home, like a chef, or like hospitals and restaurants and so forth, then if the Jew did nothing more than turn on the fire, then even Sfaradim could eat the food, because we'll add these two factors together and integrate them to create a heter. Number one, the fact that Raavad allows you outside the house of the guy. Number two, the fact that the Jew participated in some way setting up the process of bishul by turning on the fire.
And that's what's right at the restaurants in America.
Correct. And I'll tell you the truth, mathematically it makes no sense. Because I was always taught, and I'm not a mathematician, that 0 + 0 = 0. So this whole concept of shnei snifim, lekula, is not what you call a mathematical, rational concept. It has to do with the world of psak. It has to do with the fact that if there are enough tzeruf of sfeikas, you know, you can add them all together.
Create. Yeah, that is, each is like 40%. So 40% is rounds down to 0. 40% right. Rounds to 0. 80% rounds up to 1.
Right, but 40% in this case is really a 0. I'll tell you why. Because we don't accept the right. If we don't accept the right, it means we have a different definition of what bishul akum is. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see if we can fast forward to page 3. You have this thing called bishul b'mikragal. So what's the status of a microwave? So in general, you should know that a microwave is considered bishul. Lahalof. For example, on Shabbos, we don't allow cooking in a microwave.
Doesn't it depend how hot it gets, or does it matter?
I'm saying if it's real cooking, you know, if it doesn't get hot, so... I mean, assuming you obviate the electricity problem, then it should be mutter on Shabbos. But let's say you're really cooking something. To cook something, you need a certain minimum heat. And the microwave generates that heat. So microwaves are considered bishul, as far as Shabbos is concerned. Let's say you took, chas v'shalom, you took meat and milk and put them together in a microwave, you know, in a mixture. That would be basa b'chala. When it comes to Bishalakam, I'm not sure about it. And I'll tell you why. Because in Bishal Akum, the emphasis is not simply or totally on the final product. It's not on the mevushal, you know, that it's a chefta mevushal, it's cooked. But it's on the process. How did it become mevushal? And I'll give you three examples of something that is considered bishal, but it's not included in Bishal Akum, because there's no fire. Number one is maliach, which is called in English pickling. Number two, meushan, which is called smoking. And number three, kovish. Kovish is soaking. And in these three cases, there's no Bishal Akum. So for example, those poskim who allow eating OU tuna fish, even though it's Bishal Akum, they say because it's not really Bishal, what they do is, they heat up masses amounts of water to the boiling point, and the vapor, the steam, goes up. And once the tuna fish raw is packaged in the cans, the factory, the automated machine will roll the tuna fish in cans through the steam, and it will cook the tuna fish inside the can. That's called meushan. That's not Bishal Akum. So the question is whether we could apply the same kind of logic to a microwave and say that a microwave, although it is Bishal from the perspective of the food is mevushal, but nevertheless the talich is so odd, there's no fire there, it's more like these strange kinds of modes of cooking, like mevushal and kovush and moliach. So that's what you'll see here, I think, in this section. He writes, kovush eino kemevushal, and the Ramah writes in Shulchan Aruch, lo asru ele bishal shel esh. The only form of bishal that was included under bishal akum is bishal al yedei esh.
So that means nowadays using like an electric something, an electric stovetop also shouldn't count.
Well, the question whether electricity is esh is a gigantic issue. Basically, when you have a cooktop, the halacha treats that burner as esh, even though it's electrically operated. In fact, as far as the laws of Liban are concerned, we're going to be even more machmer in this case, perhaps, than in regular, you know. And not only that, if you would put a kash, you know, a piece of straw, to that electrical apparatus, it immediately goes up in smoke. But in the case of a microgal, which works with different waves, that's not considered bishul be'esh at all. And therefore, kriya pashtanit shel divrei Ramah, a superficial reading of the words of Ramah, which are based on the tour, mora, would indicate shelo nemar Israel bishul be'esh bilvad, but other forms of bishul are not included, and therefore microwave should be mutter. Meidach, what's the flip side? Nita lovish achiluk aichuti bein amachal amavushul be'esh lemein machal amavushul b'microel huchiluk dak ve'ino domil lehevdil abolet shebein ochal amavushul levein ochal meushan o maluach. He says the following, that when you steam something or you pickle something, there's a radical change in the final product. It cannot be confused or equated with cooking. In the case of a microgal, it's very difficult to see the difference. If I were to cover two, you know, and then uncover two different cooked foods, and one was cooked in the oven and they were on, you know, on a fire, and the other was made in a microwave, it's going to be very difficult for you to know the difference. Now, that's not always true, by the way. There are certain things that don't cook well in a microwave.
Schnitzel
will come out soggy. Okay, I never actually tried that experiment. No. But I've tried cheese, you know, like yellow cheese. Mm. Doesn't really cut the cheese. You know, it's not the same, it's not the same thing.
It's not heat.
Because it's not really heat.
It's exciting the molecules.
It changes the structure of the molecules. So I would say that this point is not always accurate. That there are situations where you can tell the final product, it's clear that it was done in a microwave. If you ever try to microwave pizza, yeah, you know, okay, you know, again, it gets hot, but it's not the best, you know, this and that. What other examples can I give? You know, even when you reheat food that's already been cooked, like let's say you take a piece of cooked chicken, or schnitzel, you know, it's already been prepared, cooled off.
Charlotte.
told you, heat it up in the microwave. Again, it gets hot, but it's not the same as putting it in an oven. The trouble is that we don't have any time. So we're in a rush, and she's in a rush, so, you know, just put it into the microwave and, you know, and reheat it, and that's it.
Nowadays, they don't have microwaves that they bake.
Really?
Cake in, I think.
Oh, boy. I'd like to get a hold of one of those.
Yeah, they
I never saw that. I never thought you could bake in a microgal. In any event, the Darkei Tshuva says that if you can bake something or cook something in the sun, that's solar energy, which is called Chame, which is called Bishul B'chama, he says there is no Bishul Akum in such a case. But once again, it could be that Bishul B'chama, there is a radical difference. You could actually recognize and discern the difference between that and regular Bishul. So he quotes on the top left column, a Shvut Yitzchak, in the name of Rav Yoshev, who passed away not long ago, that he wants to be machmer as far as a microgal. And if you're talking about Gdol, who passed away recently, what about the Shevet Alevi, who writes, Rav Vozna, that you're not allowed to eat food that was prepared in a microwave by a guy. It's Bishul Akum.
That means prepared by a guy means like the guy.
No, I mean to say prepared. What I meant to say, I shouldn't have said prepared. That's a bad word. What I meant to say was that it was inedible. The guy put it into the microwave and made it edible. That's awesome. Rabosa, I'm not telling you that this is the final word. I just don't have right now access to those poskim who are makil on this. But I'm sure that there are. The only thing is that a lot of the kulos that you want to get are not written down. They're kind of like Torah Shebal Peh. Like, for example, I did a research project on yichud in the case of adoption. A parent adopts a child. So you have the father with an adopted girl, the mother with an adopted boy. Is there a yichud problem? And in all the literature, you'll see chumrah after chumrah. But trust me, it's mutter. No, I shouldn't say that. I'm going very far. But I spoke to great poskim who are making it. It's just not in writing. You know, it's very hard to find it in writing. Then I want to talk to you about things like desserts. Chatifim. Chatifim is like bamba, snacks, you know. Do you guys eat bamba? I mean, I don't eat bamba, but my kids love bamba, you know. Or cornflakes. So the question here is it ola al shulchan malachim? You know, it could be made of potatoes. Let's say potato chips would be a classical case of a chatif. It's potatoes, which are inedible raw. And King Henry VIII loves potato chips. But perhaps it's not ola al shulchan malachim. Like you said before, you know, if you had the daily menu, you know, the printout from the king, it wouldn't say potato chips on it. So he says the following. One could ostensibly say de lo shayach, it doesn't apply, the Iser Bishul plan in these kinds of cooked foods, because the Gemara says that only something that's olal shulchan malachim lelafes es hapas, it is added to the seuda. That's called lelafes bas hapas, an integral part of the pas. Like, for example, if you wash on bread, then you don't have to make an additional specific brach on anything that's lelafes bas hapas, because it's considered part of the suda. And the Rambam, when he codifies the halacha of Bishul Akum, he says only something that's chelik me'asuda, that's part of the suda. Chatifim, all these kinds of snacks that you buy in those machines, you know, those Snicker bars and the potato chips and the... okay, I know it's a fast day. This was a bad... I apologize. Yeah, I'm talking about pizza and cooking food. This is really bad. But you know what? Maybe there's a kiyum inui on a tinus. I don't know. I'm not saying this.
Rub it in, yeah.
Yeah. Only on Yom Kippur there's a kiyum inui. Okay. He says, v'chatifim are not a chelik me'asu'uda. They're not a real integral part of the suda. And the Rambam writes, though, that there's an additional iser of parperes. Parperes is a kind of a dessert, like sweets. They used to eat sweet things at the end of a meal. But nevertheless, it's also considered part of a suda. Like, for example, my father, may he rest in peace, would never make a bracha on cake at the end of a meal. I would guess that everyone here in this room makes a bracha. Also not?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Oh, that's interesting. I thought it was like my father's minig, and I live by that creed because it's my father's minig, but I didn't know only it was commonplace.
Only if it's parich, it's filled up with something, and it's...
It sounds like you're talking about pasta, bava, kistin. But I'm just saying, if a piece of cake is served at the end of a meal, my father would never make a bracha on it. It was considered lelafis bas hapas.
Well, candy?
Candy would make a bracha on, or ice cream, or sherbet, and all this stuff. Hainu machol shemeviyim li... He quotes at the beginning of the Suda, legorer es hateyavim, like the Gemara in Ivory Psachim says, they used to start the meal with wine in order to induce the appetite. O besofa suda betar monach rona. Some people would say that they used to eat small fish and wine at the end of the meal, but it was all part of the meal itself, and therefore it's included under Bishul Akum. That's called Parperes Hapas. But Chatifim are not really brought out. You know, you bring out those little dishes of different candies and what have you, potato chips and peanuts and whatever. That's not part of the Suda. That's not called Parperes Lelafes Es Hapas. And therefore, we could have a tremendous kula here as far as all these Chatifim are concerned, even though King Henry VIII eats bamba. I'm sure it's like, you know, one of his most favorite foods. But nevertheless, it's not included, and it's not considered Olal Shulchan Malachim because it's not an integral part of a Suda Chashuva. That's what a Shulchan Malachim means. The Pri Chadosh says, Ein Iser B'macholam Amugoshim Kimona Achrona Bilvad. Fascinating. The Pri Chadosh goes a step further. He says, any kind of food that's only served as a dessert is not included under the Ikra Suda, the Suda Chashuva of Bishul Akum. And how much more so then could we be Mekil with regard to Chatifim? So we're not going to go as far as to accept the Pri Chadosh. And we're not going to be making on every single dessert, and therefore cakes and so forth will be a problem of Bishul Akum, but we will be making on chatifim, on potato chips and the like, because those are considered external to the Suda. They're beyond the Suda. Would this help us for cereals, like cornflakes? Cornflakes are not eaten in a bread meal and integrated into a Suda Chashuva. But unfortunately, the poskim are not going to accept this logic. The Chasam Sofer says, "Ein heter macholim elu mishum she mahavim suda b'fnei atzma." When I eat breakfast, and this is like every day except for today, I make a meal out of cereal, and I don't wash. So even though it's not integrated into a Suda Chashuva in the classic sense, but the Chasam Sofer says since it forms a Suda Bifnei Atzma, you would never be Kovei a Suda on potato chips, maybe there are such people, but nevertheless in the case of cornflakes, since you might be Kovei, so to speak, a Suda, I'm just using that word loosely, therefore it's included under Parperes Hapas. The idea of Parperes Hapas is that it's part of the Suda. This is even worse. It is a Suda unto itself. And therefore the Aruch HaShulchan paskins that we should not eat cereals that are produced by Goyim. Now, Halach L'maisa, although we could be Mekil in the case of Chatifim, because that's not Olal Shulchan Malachim, in the case of cereals, it's going to be very hard to be Mekil. And therefore we're going to have to find some other heta for cornflakes. Now, the Igros Moshe in the last late tshuva, this was I think published posthumously, where Moshe Feinstein suggests that even potato chips are included on the Bishul Akum. So I can't tell you, I don't know that Rav Moshe Feinstein avoided eating potato chips. He probably never saw a potato chip. But theoretically, I don't know. But it says here in this posthumous tshuva Rav Moshe that potato chips comes on the Bishul Akum. Not only that, he quotes here the Sefer Emes LeYaakov. I'm not sure if that's Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, probably not. But anyway, this Sefer Emes LeYaakov says that potato chips are asur because it all depends on whether the min is olal shulchan malacha. As we look at the class and the category of the food, we don't look at the way it was prepared and the way it was cooked. So you cut up, you know, potato chips very thin, but that's irrelevant. Even though you're eating it only as a snack, but it belongs to a min, namely potatoes, which are shlokos, which are included under the Iser of Bishalakim, although I told you that way back in the day there was a question as to whether potatoes were olal shulchan malachim. But lamaisa, I don't think anyone accepts this tshuva of Moshe Feinstein or the Emes Liakov. We're all mekil halacha lamaisa, if the kashrus is okay, on chatifim, on potato chips, pretzels, and the like. There's no precedent or source for assuming that bishalakim is determined by the min. It's not determined by the min, it's determined by the way it was prepared. He writes here the name of the Shulchan Aruch, that pas shel orez v'dochen, you know, you can make a rice bread, ein bo isur mishum bishalakim. I guess because this rice bread is not served on the Shulchan Malachim. I don't know. He has another posek who says, Ein Iser Bishal Akum B'chips. And why? Because in the case of Pas Orez, of rice bread, Ein Hatam Mishnei Mipnei Shemino Olal Shulchan Malachim Nei Shu Atzma Yochal Lalasul Shulchan Malachim. In other words, if we ask a rice bread, it's because the rice bread itself is olal shulchan malach. But there is no source for this concept. It all depends on the min, whether the min is olal shulchan malachim or the min is not olal shulchan malachim. But the real issue here becomes cereals. Again, I want to look this over one more time and then I'll let you go. What's going on with cereals? The Gani Boker. He says in the name of the Chassam Sofer that these are included on the Bishal Akum because we eat them as a Suda. They themselves form a Suda. I don't know.
Well, some of them are made from
What's
rice.
What's the heter for cornflakes?
Some of them are made from rice. Maybe corn falls into the category as rice, but it's not one of like the important grains. It's just corn. It's not a...
But what are you going to do with all the other cereals? You know, what are you going to do with puffed wheat? I mean, you're not going to eat puffed wheat? You know, wheat is one of the chameshes meaning dogon.
Yeah.
And 90% of your cereals have flour in them that's coming from wheat. I mean, it's true that cornflakes comes from corn, so maybe you'll find a cooler. But what about all the other cereals?
Yeah.
Well, give me the names of the cereals. I'm a little out of it.
It's like Cocoa Pebbles, Fruity Pebbles. Those are all like rice-based.
All right, but what about wheat-based cereals? Cheerios, for example. It's made from flour. Maybe oat flour, but flour.
Or shredded wheat, yeah.
So, shredded wheat. So, you want to eat Cheerios. It's got an OU. Great. Everything's kosher. But it's Bishal Akum.
Maybe it's such a...
Maybe
such
you want to add the fact that it's not in the base Akum, so we have the Ramah.
Yeah.
Should we say that the Mashgichim and the OU are turning on the fire? I don't believe that.
Maybe it's such a factory automated scale.
What?
It's not even
maybe there.
Cheerios all across the board? Is it Jews?
Maybe there's some pilot light there.
Maybe it's these massive factories. They just like light the fire once a week, once a month, and it just automates everything. Like, is it?
I have a feeling that we're going to have to assume that these cereals are not olal shulchan malach.
Yeah.
Even though the Chassam Sofer is not like that, because it's a meal unto itself. But I don't know. I don't know that we can find another cooler for it. Yeah, but the question is, who's turning on the machine? If the machine is actually cooking the food, and the guy is turning on the machine, that would come under Bishal Akum. Again, unless we go with the Ravid that this is commercial and manufactured, it's not in the base Akum.
Mm.
I just want to see what we skipped here on page. Where was it? Page 2. Oh, there's a Rashi and Beitza. All right, it's not crucial. So, mostly we'll stop here. Wish everyone a meaningful fast. Now, the logic of the heter of Eino Olal Shulchan Malachim, if you hold like the Arzarua and Rashi and the Gemara about Kashrus, is that if it's not a Chashav Machal, it's not an integral part of a significant Suda, then there's no Shash that the Jew is going to start eating non-kosher food when the guy continuously invites him. Because again, only if we get used to eating with goyim, because they're giving us macholim chashuvim, that's what we have to worry about the chashash that ultimately the goy will invite us into his kitchen, into his living room, and he'll be machal us non-kosher food. And similarly, when we talk about the head to the Rashba, if she's a mersharetes, it's a business relationship. It's not a friendship relationship or an intimacy, and it's not going to lead to chitun, and that's why it's mutter.